Welcome to another edition of The Court Report. I'm Jerry Price. I'm joined by Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Banghart. And coach, welcome.
I'm glad to be here, Jerry.
So we were just talking about what we're going to talk about. Because again, you guys haven't played. Another week has gone by with no games for the Tigers. But that ends this weekend with trip to Yale and to Brown on Friday night and Saturday night. And I guess this would be a good time to ask you, what time this game are those both games at 6?
Those are details I don't know. I do know, however, that your son is going to call the game. The Yale-Princeton game, so he better be wearing orange socks or orange underwear or even just a Princeton Tiger shirt.
He will be the public address announcer, so he...
He's the one that will say, Bella for three!
Yes, he will. And
okay.
So he obviously grew up around here, and he goes to Sacred Heart University, which is about 15 minutes away from Yale. And before the start of this academic year, I got an email from people I knew at Yale, and they said, would your son be available to be the PA announcer for volleyball? They had a volleyball tournament coming up. And I wasn't even sure he'd ever done PA for anything. But, you know, I mean, I've done PA here for decades.
Yeah.
And so I said, sure, go ahead and email him. And, you know, they've known him since he was a kid. And he's always been tagging along on games. And they got him to do 7 women's volleyball games in 2 days. And after that, I was like, oh, how did he do? And they're like, oh, my God, he was great.
Awesome.
So they got him to do the rest of volleyball season. Then they got him to also do field hockey.
Oh, wow.
And
does he ever study?
He must be, because he's actually doing well in school.
Good.
And they got him to do women's basketball, so he's been doing women's basketball. And the funny thing is that when he talks about Yale, he says, when he talked about Princeton-Yale volleyball, because they tied for league championship, that was like the big thing. And he was like, well, we have nobody who could stop your outside hitter. And I'm like, okay, we is Yale now?
Oh, no. See, that's key information. I'll look forward to... giving him a warm welcome when I see him.
And I'm actually going to go. I'm going to go to the game.
Okay, so at least we have one Price kid who's rooting for the right guys.
So he plays lacrosse at Sacred Heart, and they have a scrimmage on Saturday morning, and I figure I'll go watch the scrimmage, stay over and go watch the scrimmage and see your game on Friday night. And,
awesome. Well, thanks for coming.
And you know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned, does he ever study? Because he has become a much better college student than high school student.
Hmm.
And I feel like you don't have that a lot here at Princeton, because all of these kids are top flight students coming in addition to players. But here's one thing we can talk about. This is the academic piece, which is, do you have a good sense when they get here of how they're going to fit in academically? And I know there's programs in place that sort of
support them,
and the FSI program and you know, things that, and the McGraw Learning Center and all these.
Yeah.
Things that are available to students when they're here. But how hard is that, one, to, because it is a whole school filled with kids who did great in high school and never really had to worry about stuff like that.
You know, each kid has a unique journey here, but I think one of the real strengths of Princeton is that it's not one size fits all. It's every kid gets their great experience. And I'm most proud to be at an institution that these kids really do find their passion. These are not kids that are searching for jobs. They're actually searching for their passion within their 4-year experience. And they do that with getting a holistic education, not only through athletics, but through the off-campus internship program and through the study abroad program in the summers. And these are kids that are really actively trying to seek out interests where, you know, our kids have come, as you know, from all different backgrounds. It's socioeconomically and locationally, and they study all different things. And their success is truly, it's defined by themselves. And, you know, we've had no academic issues of any kind. And that's not because it hasn't been challenging. It's that I think this place has inspired people to find what matters to them in a way that I'm really proud of. Princeton's doing the right thing by the – I have a pretty close study, because I get a very intimate relationship with 4 kids a year. And for my 4 that are all very different from one another, Princeton has transformed them academically. And they go from being those kind of compliant students that you are in high school to get through your checklist of classes and testing and sort of this more kind of rote experience to this world of opportunity. And how they manage that opportunity, it takes time, but they really own it well.
I think that, you know, we hear, when we talk about kids, we talk about them athletically, and it's not, when we talk about them like publicly, you're talking about kids athletically, and fans come to games and they see the public display of wins and losses and stuff. And it's easy to forget the, you know, all those same things apply to the academic side. So you have a kid who will come in and you say, you know, I'm trying to think of a kid off the top of my head, who, maybe Annie Tarakshian.
Yeah.
Like, did you think she was going to become the player she became when she came out of high school?
Right. It's a good point.
Do you ever think to yourself, like, this is a kid academically here who's going to be okay?
Right.
No, I'm not worried that they're going to get through. And then all of a sudden they turn out to be like just a superstar academically.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Naveen, Rashid, and Annie Traction are two great examples of, they came to Princeton for the
opportunity. I picked her at random. I was just,
oh my gosh. Yeah, no, she has totally transformed herself. Mm-hmm. She was fluent in three languages when she came, but her test scores were a bit below maybe what some of her peers were. But she was the Princeton material in terms of her background and interests and sort of how much she was going to take advantage of this place. And that's what she did. She made connections here quickly. She utilized the resources on campus. She utilized her off-campus summer internships. She worked at Nike. She's now working in, she wants to work in senior care. She wants to own retirement communities. And she actually stopped playing overseas because she got this job offer she couldn't turn down. And again, finding her passion in senior care when that wasn't, that's always, she came here to do that. And the kids that come in from a little bit of a disadvantaged in terms of their level of experience, either through their high school experience or through their testing, they do just as well and oftentimes even better than the kids that come from really elite preparatory backgrounds because they're each finding their own journey. And I'm really proud because when I was looking at taking the Princeton job, they weren't very good, as you know, at the time, basketball-wise. And I just sort of thought, you know, a really competitive loner environment is not the way I'm going to create a basketball program that's going to be successful. So it might not fit with the educational, with my values as a coach, and you're never going to have success if you don't match the institutional values. And I got really lucky that Princeton's educational values actually very much align with mine, and their basketball growth is as important to their academic growth, and it's individual, because that's how growth operates. How you fit into the greater community matters.
So as you're thinking about taking the job then,
yeah.
And you're thinking about building your program that way, were you surprised at the extent? Because I think that when you're a kid who comes to college, athlete or non-athlete, I mean, I never considered this when I was in college.
Yeah.
The number of people whose job it is to provide services to the students who are here. I'm not just talking about athletes. There's no athletic study hall at Princeton and things like that.
Right.
But like, just the number of people who work directly with students to improve their
experience here.
Experience.
It's unbelievable. It's one of the biggest educational things that I think I've provided my players is exactly that, is to having them understand that asking for help is a sign of strength. And getting someone to edit your paper before it's due is a sign of strength.
But isn't that really hard for kids who, like,
very.
They're always the kids who are the tutors. They're
exactly.
always the kids who people come to for that.
Absolutely. And they're the models of, like, I can do this. And they learn that, you know, living on an island. I got a great email that meant a lot to me from Jess Berry, who graduated in 2009. And she talked about, we're preparing for our alumni weekend coming up. And I had reached out and asked if she was coming. And she said, you know, I really, it's been a few years since I've been out, but I really have learned what being a part of something is. She's like, I learned to get into Princeton. I thought it was about me just achieve, and sort of on my island in that way. And Princeton kind of pulled her out of that and made her understand that she's a part of something and asking for help and outreaching. And, another Janet, our director of admissions, would say that the people that find success at Princeton are the ones that want to be a part of something and are not just worried about when their classes are and when their practices are, but really want to engage in the place. And those are the kind of people that find happiness here, which fits in perfectly because I want players that want to engage in the process of growth and of being great. And it's a place that it's so fun to watch their success athletically. It's even more fun to think about we are truly a part of their experience here. We are not the defining experience. It's really neat.
And, you talked about your values and the values of the school, and I think that, that's one of the more impressive things about Princeton that I've learned in my time here is, that there's what we do here in athletic communications. We always say, well, what's the number one thing we're trying to do? We're trying to enhance the experience of the athletes. And, one of the ways we do that is to put their stories on the webpage and, and through social media and through streaming their games. But it's all geared essentially to giving them the best experience that they can have. And then you think about, equate that over every office on this campus, and it's an extraordinary amount of, you lose track of that, I think, when you you think of, you think of the professors and the classes and the majors and all that stuff, and you really don't think of the other side of the equation, which is all of the people who are here to help.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that President Eisgruber, when he stops by our games or he walks campus, he knows a lot of our students. When your president, who's setting the tone of community, is recognizing students by face, it just trickles down. And so whether you're in the dining hall, I went to the dining hall. I'm a fellow at one of the dining halls, and I went to a meal. I met with actually Sam Swiesky, our volleyball coach, to talk with about his program and my program and whatnot. And we went, and in the dining hall, someone said to me, "I miss Annie Traction. How's she doing?" And I was like, "Wow, she graduated in 2016. And it's just like you forget that people care about him everywhere on this campus. Otherwise, there's other places to work. So, yeah, you hit that right on the head, I think.
So we didn't have anything to talk about, and then suddenly we found 10 minutes worth of stuff that's
talking about the greatness
related.
Of others. I mean,
but let's talk
cool.
about let's talk about basketball
let's
now
do it.
As you come back. So the men had their game against Rowan on Sunday.
Yep.
And my question is, what's the value? Like, so your team's going to take the court not having played in 20 days.
Yeah.
Their team's going to take the court having had a game that was not competitive at any point.
Right.
You don't seem to want to go down that route because you could if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. So you clearly think the 20 days off and then just step on the court and go is fine. Like, the men made six of their first seven threes. It
yeah.
wouldn't matter who they were playing. I mean, that game didn't look much different than their games against Cornell and Columbia within the league. So what's the number one concern you have for a team that hasn't played in 20 days?
Yeah, you know, there'll be certainly a few minutes of
and
the,
has to go on the road.
And has to go on the road against two very hungry teams. It's a really big weekend for kind of all four teams that playing in this one. You know, I there's going to be a little bit of rust of just the ebbs and flows of a game and the back and forth. I just think that our playing against ourselves is I think it's better than playing against a Division III team because of where our program is. And so we have done as much as we can to simulate a game environment. We get one less game in the Ivy League than the NCAA limit, and a Division II or III game doesn't count. And so that hurts your RPI a little bit in our sense. So there are reasons kind of competitively that we're trying to maintain that, but also I think the neat thing about coaching is that, so Penn does it. They played a Division II team last game, and same thing. They won by like 40 or something. And so I can guarantee that Penn's doing that because they think that creates an advantage for them within their program, just like I think what we're doing creates an advantage for us. But there'll be rust, I would imagine, but there'll also be, real hopefully, some enthusiasm for the fact of playing, wearing the same jersey together again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to think that's sort of like, oh, we haven't played in so long. It's so great to be back out here playing. I mean, I always get the sense of that from the men, even in the Division III game. If you had the opportunity, and it's really hard, I get, because everybody's in their conference schedules.
Yeah.
But if you had the opportunity on Sunday, say,
yeah.
to play
Rutgers,
yeah,
be great.
You would do that.
I would do it. Yeah, we could. We would schedule a game with an actual Division I high-level opponent for sure. But, you know, they don't get their conference schedules until very late. And then now in the middle of their competitive conference season, they're picking up. So they might have an off week. When you play 16 conference games, when you have an off 3 days, it's a good time to work on you. I'm not sure they're going to pick up the Princeton Tigers. But we try. We try. It's very difficult. So we've you know, brought in some scrimmage guys at times. And we ask ourselves to be the competitors that we are daily.
So now as you head back into play, your team has played 16 games in 2.5 months, 13-3. Now you play 11 in 29 days. So,
gosh, every time I talk with you, you're so statistical-based, it makes me a little nervous.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a daunting run.
No doubt. And they start classes, which is always a big adjustment because you go from kind of owning campus where these kids are just playing basketball and eating and preparing, and then you go to class, and it's Bicker Week, which is the sort of how these kids pick their eating clubs. And there's going to be a lot of adjustments.
The flip side of it is that you get to have a very set routine, though.
Yes, no doubt. And then, obviously, I get to travel less with recruiting, so that will be nice to be home more. But it's also, you know, you remember that this age group, the benefit of it is that they're resilient, and they don't – I've never done anything but back-to-back play, and I've been, you know, I'm almost 40, so it's all I know.
But to have, like, you know, when you're in the non-league portion of the season, even up through the first league games that you've played – you know, you have a game on Thursday, then you have a game.
Totally. So you're
8 days
off
later,
and also figure out your lifts. So you're trying to lift within your season, and your lift days change because you're off after a game. And yeah, this is becomes like clockwork. We know what we're doing. I can tell you where I am from now until the end of March every minute, which is actually quite comforting.
And of course, you have the Friday Saturday games for five consecutive weekends with the February 13th game against Penn mixed in on a Tuesday, and it begins at at Yale on Friday,
Yale on
Saturday.
Yeah, it's a big weekend. You know, I think there's going to be a big fight for that sort of the tournament. Who's going to get into the tournament this year? And Yale and Brown are absolutely two of those teams that are kind of front and center in that fight, and so they're really hungry. And the league has so far shown that home games matter a lot, and we have to go on the road. But great teams win on the road, so we're prepared to play a tough battle on the road.
So Brown got off to that great start. They were 11-1 at one point, and then they lost to Yale. So you know, now Yale's feeling pretty good about themselves, and then Brown comes back and beats Yale.
Yeah.
seems like, you know, both of these teams are capable and clearly
fast.
Everybody wants to beat Princeton.
Absolutely.
Say, like, are they similar?
They are. They both have, you know, a stretch post, and they both have scoring and quick lead guards. You know, Yale's two highest scorers are seniors. They've got good experience there. And then they've got kind of the youthful enthusiasm that we have. And then Brown brought back basically the entire team from last year. So both.
And they were the fourth team in the tournament.
And they were the fourth team in the tournament. And they were, you know, they were dangerous all year. They beat us, you know, of course, last year. So both teams are going to be a battle. And, you know, if we're not excited about that, then we don't deserve it. So I am super excited. I've been with my team for 20 straight days. They're super excited.
Well, that 20-day wait ends Friday night. That'll be in New Haven against Yale, and then Saturday it's at
with your son as the PA announcer. So
Greg Price.
Can you hear the PA announcer on the Ivy League Digital feed?
You can hear some in the background. I've never heard him do a game, so I.
Oh, cool.
Hear
well, well, that we have something to talk about next week.
Yes,
I will give
absolutely.
Him a strict report card.
And we will talk about that, and then of course we'll look ahead to the what our talk next week and talk about the big stretch where you'll have the three games
and alumni weekend, which I think we're at 50 alum coming back. It's going to be awesome.
So it's Princeton at Yale and at Brown, and for Courtney Banghart, thank you for being here once again.
It's so fun, Jerry.
And to everybody who listens each week, thank you very much for your support of Princeton Women's Basketball. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of the Court Report.